Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our callers, some interesting topics to talk over?
Yes, black licorice. Now, I know that everyone in America loves black licorice.
Haven't had any in a whole long time.
But there may be some perils about having too much black licorice, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about what that might be. And then new recommendations for pap smears. How often should we do them? We're doing them too often now, according to new recommendations for some women. Recommendations from the Cancer Society and the American College of Obstetrics and gynecologists.
Mm-hmm. And what's our recipe?
Venison with cranberry wine sauce. Many of you have tried venison. This is a good recipe. Venison is a red meat, but it has less fat, is healthier than the traditional red meats that are out there. And often during certain seasons of the year, there's more venison around because you may have a local person who shot a deer, and this may be a recipe you'll want to consider.
Venison. Coming up along with our medical myth buster later in the hour. Now, Zorba, let's get to the phones, welcoming a listener in Logan, Utah. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, what's up?
Well, I have, like, since college, maybe for like 12 years, have these dizzy spells when I stand up and I kind of lose my balance and squat down to make sure I don't fall like a tree. And it used to be like maybe once a month, and now maybe every week or two I have several spells in a day, and then I'm fine for a week or two. And so the increase in frequency has me wondering, like, is this a problem I should have checked out? Is this a symptom of something else, or is it just kind of how I'm built? Yeah. I don't know.
Do you get dizzy spells to the extent that you black out?
You know, when I squat down, I'm kind of woozy and my tongue gets numb, and I'm not sure when I stand up if I've been there for a second or for a minute. You know, not incredibly long, but everything sounds kind of distant. I don't know.
Yeah, I've had this same problem for a lot of years, and now I think I fixed it. And after Zorba tells you how to do it, I'll give you my advice.
No, I think you should give your advice first, frankly. I want to hear your advice first. I want to reverse roles. So Tom will now tell you what he does. So you have the same problem, Tom?
I have through most of my life,
and?
But I've found that exercise
exercise has made a difference.
Has
to you.
Made a big made, difference
made a big
to
difference
me.
To you.
I think whether it's the inner ear thing or whatever, but doing working out and exercise,
so,
it seems to have solved my problem.
And that's something. Do you exercise very much?
On and off, probably not as much as I should.
On and off, yeah. That's the typical American thing.
Yeah.
You know, dusty treadmill in the basement. And let me explain a few things that are going on. When you stand up suddenly or when you move suddenly, you move quickly, what happens is your blood pressure has to change because it's got to get blood up into your brain. And there's a sudden response that occurs. And certain drugs such as beta blockers will slow down that response. Age slows down that response. So when people are older, they often get dizzier. Part of that is just the response of their body to it. And I think that's really what's going on. When you squat, are you doing what's called a Valsalva maneuver? You're squatting, you mean as part of exercise or what?
No, just so that I don't fall over like a tree. I just kind of squat down and put my hands on the ground.
You mean to make
myself.
To make sure you don't fall. But yeah. the actual thing that you're doing that produces the dizziness is what? What's the most common activity that you do that makes you feel dizzy?
Just standing up suddenly after sitting down for a while.
Okay. Yeah. So that's really what that is. What's happening is your blood pressure is just not equalizing as quickly. Tom, by the way, gets a point.
Thank you.
Because you're welcome, Tom. Yeah. I mean, you've got a lot of points saved there, but because he's exactly right. Exercise is actually the key issue here, because what you want to do is you want to build up your muscles. You want to build up that response that you have. And there are sort of three things that are important in exercise. There's cardiovascular or aerobic. There's strengthening, what you're doing with your muscles. And there's balance. And those are the three pivotals, if you will, the three legs of exercise. And what you need, what I highly recommend, is that you engage in an exercise program, either by going to a gym or somebody else who's a trainer, and you work on all three. you know, you work on balance. That might be taking a Tai Chi class or a yoga class, which is excellent for balance. Yoga is actually excellent for the whole thing. You do something aerobically and you do something strength-wise. And I think what you'll discover is that you won't have the same response. I think that once you build up your muscles properly, this response is going to go away. That's what I think it is.
Excellent. Easier than I thought.
Yeah. Well, no. You haven't started exercising yet. After you've exercised 3 days a week for 6 months, call us back or send us a note on Facebook and we'll see if it's easier than you thought.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we appreciate the call. Thank you. What did I hear the other day? Some physical fitness guy saying, if you're exercising and if you're feeling good, you're doing it wrong.
Sounds like Jack LaLanne.
You have to really suffer.
You know, pain or gain. Yeah. Now, let's see. Now, I exercise under regulation. Do I suffer? Well, part of it I like, but it's not natural, I guess. But I like some exercise, like skiing I like. Do you like exercise when you're
I do now. When I was a kid, I used to get dizzy a lot. I'd be lying on the couch and get up and I'd black out. Mm-hmm. And we had tropical fish. I was like eight years old. And I got up and blacked out, grabbed the fish thing.
Oh, gosh, I hear it.
Down it came.
It.
Water and fish.
Yeah, no, you really did.
And you know what?
What?
I didn't miss those fish at all. 1-800-4-7 I'm going to have the tropical fish fans.
That's right. The tropical fish lobby is now going to send you lots of messages.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Bloomington, Indiana. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
So 4 to 5 months ago, I had an accident on a ripstick, which
on
is kind of like this novelty-type skateboard that's two wheels and a swivel in the middle. And I was riding downhill on this thing and jumped off in these sandals that were too big and hit the pavement pretty hard with my left knee first and then my right elbow and then skidding on my back. And, of course, I wasn't wearing any pads or a shirt even or a helmet. And apparently it wasn't as graceful of a fall as it felt like at the time. But since then, and it was a pretty bad impact on my left knee in particular, and since then it's been giving me some trouble. It'll hurt and get kind of stiff sometimes, and then I'll go a few days and won't feel anything, but then sometimes it'll tighten up, and then I'll have to, like, limp for, like, a couple hours. And usually it gets stiff when I sit down for a while and then stand back up, or if I'm biking, because I ride my bike a lot, and I'm, like, riding too fast. And like in a higher gear, I'm pushing too hard, it'll hurt. But just walking around, it doesn't really hurt. Mm-hmm. And an old boss I had was a former paramedic and said that it sounded like a torn meniscus, and she's really good at freaking people out. And I got paranoid because she said you had to have surgery and all that. So I wanted to see what Zorba had to say.
Got it. So she's good at freaking people out. So that's what she's known for.
Well, yeah, you know, inducing paranoia kind of thing.
Well, that's inducing paranoia. I want to get back to this thing. So this is a skateboard with a swivel. What exactly is going on?
Yeah, it's like it's two wheels that are in line, one in front, one in back. And in between the front part where you put your front foot and the back foot, there's a swivel so you can, like, theoretically, like, go uphill on it without taking your foot off. I think they sell them in the middle of malls or something.
No, I think if I got in one of those things, I think I'd get on it once.
How old are
That'd
you?
Be it.
Oh, I'm 27 now.
Isn't that too old to be on one of those?
Not at all. What are you talking about? Not at all.
You should be, you know, in cars.
Yeah, it should be cars, right? You should be on a motorcycle crashing something really dangerous. That's right, really dangerous. Right, exactly. Well, let me tell you some of the things that are probably going on. First of all, as you said, it wasn't as graceful as you envisioned it as you were actually falling. But you know it wasn't, you know, when it was all done and you were taking inventory of your injuries, then you know there's a lot of stuff going on. Because basically, you know, you're at a speed, you got your body, and you're falling all over the place, and you get injuries. Now, let's look at what you can do about it. First of all, sure, it could always be a meniscus injury. How do you tell? You can't always tell without an MRI scan. You don't get an MRI scan unless you're going to do surgery, and you don't do surgery unless there's significant dysfunction. So how do we get your body back? Because what you did is we know you had a traumatic event to the knee. So first of all, you said walking does not produce a problem, and you're stable when you're walking, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that's very important. First of all, from an exercise point of view, I recommend quad sets. Do you know what a quad set is? Or have you ever done quad sets?
No.
Well, we'll put it on our website at zorbapastor.org. We'll put an explanation of quad sets and a connection to YouTube for quad sets. Okay. But these are basic exercises, a basic exercise whereby you are, if you put your legs straight out, when you put your legs straight out and you're not doing very much at all, you've got a little hollow in the bottom of the knee, the area called the popliteal fossa. And a quad set is where you push your leg down and get rid of that empty space at the bottom of the knee, and you hold it for 10 seconds, and you push as hard as you can. And what you do is you go to the count of 10, and then you do 10 reps of those, okay? So, and you do that twice a day. So it's 10 reps for roughly 10 to 15 seconds twice a day. This begins to build up the quadricep muscles. And what this does is it takes away stress from the knee. And once again, we'll put it on our website so you can visually look at it at zorbapastor.org. That's number one. Number two, I would recommend trying an anti-inflammatory for a month. You might have inflammation in the knee. I'm sure you did right after the injury, because that would be the body's natural response. And it might just be hanging out there, just like if you don't put soap and water on a sore and try to get it to heal, it doesn't heal as well. I would recommend two over-the-counter Aleve tablets, generic Aleve, don't buy the name brand, save your money. Two Aleve, they're 220 milligrams of naproxen each. That's the only way they come. Twice daily for 1 month. So two Aleve in the morning, two Aleve in the evening. If you've got inflammation in the joint, at the end of a month, you'll know. If you go, hey, the pain's gone away, you may decide to keep the Aleve on actually for 2 to 3 months and eventually taper off of it. That's it. Aleve morning and evening. Quad sets, 10 reps, morning and evening, that may do the trick. You could have a cartilage tear, but frankly, conservative treatment can even help with cartilage tears. Why? Because if they're small enough, the body doesn't pay much attention to it. That's kind of the way to – if it's a big cartilage tear, it's not going to do anything, and you're going to continue to have some stuff. This doesn't sound like a big one to me, because you're stable when you're walking. You don't have a lot of you don't have any swelling in the knee to speak of, so – that's it. Well, good luck. Good luck on your and good luck on your skating career. Please let us
know. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. So, Zorba, licorice can what be bad for us or what?
Well, licorice. Now, people have strong opinions about licorice, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's red licorice and black licorice. Do you like red licorice?
I haven't eaten either kind of licorice in a whole bunch of decades.
Well, this is very interesting.
Yeah.
And this was an FDA, FDA actually made an announcement recently that licorice, overdosing on licorice, could you think you could overdose on candy, might actually cause a change in potassium levels. And what they were looking at
is this all black or red or?
Well, it's black licorice.
Now,
before I tell you about how much licorice you should have, let me give you a few things. First of all, I had a patient of mine, wonderful patient of mine who has since passed away, and his wife actually brought this information into me at the office, and you said, do you think this is the trouble that we had with Harry's licorice levels? She told me I could discuss this on the air.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know. And she handed me this FDA document, and I looked at it. We had tremendous trouble controlling his potassium, tremendous trouble, and he was on a diuretic, which affected his potassium. Well, she said, you know, we used to go to Farm and Fleet, and which is a store in Wisconsin, and we get two bags of licorice. One was the good German licorice, and one was the cheap generic licorice. And he'd always finish the bag of licorice by the time we got home. He ate the whole bag of licorice.
Oh my God.
Now, Harry did weigh 385 pounds, so he was a big boy, but he ate a bag of licorice. Well, since that time, I have learned that good licorice actually contains something called glycyrrhizin, and cheap licorice contains anise oil, which smells like licorice but isn't. Did you know that?
Can you tell the difference?
I don't eat black licorice, so I don't know. He could tell the difference. He liked the good stuff, but didn't want to pay all the money. So he'd finish the bag. And they did this. He ate licorice, half a bag to a bag of licorice every other day.
Yeah.
That's how much he ate. Well, he had tremendous difficulty with potassium. And what the FDA found was that if you're eating 2 ounces or more of black licorice, that this can affect your potassium levels and cause them to fall. When your potassium levels fall too much, especially if you're an older adult on heart medications, you can get a heart rhythm disturbance, you can get high blood pressure, you can get swelling, you can get edema, you can get congestive heart failure.
Go away.
go away exactly. These are serious things. This is not a small issue. Now, not a lot of people eat black licorice. On the other hand, go to the store and look at the candy counter. It's for sale, which means somebody is eating it.
Can they call the cheap stuff licorice? Because you'd think if it had different stuff in it, they ought to make them call it some different thing.
It's all called licorice. It's probably called licorice flavor. See, it's called licorice flavor. But I want to tell you something about licorice. It's also in a lot of folk remedies. It's in folk remedies in the Far East, in Turkey, for instance. It's used as a treatment for heartburn, stomach ulcers, sore throat, sinus infections. So if your folk remedy smells like licorice, it might have the licorice stuff, which is glycyrrhizin, or it might have anise oil. But in any case, it might affect your potassium levels. Be careful.
That toll-free number.
And red, by the way, is not the same. Red is different.
The number is 800-462-7413. And a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee now. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, my 14-year-old son fell off his skateboard and hurt his elbow. When he got to the emergency room, his blood pressure was 180 over 140. And they gave him a few minutes to settle down, and the next time they took it, it was 280 over 190. Turned out he had a malformed right kidney that was maybe a fifth the size of a normal kidney, and he was suffering from renal hypertension.
I'm assuming that the breaking the elbow had nothing to do with the kidney problem.
It was just the occasion for us to take him to the emergency room and for them to discover the blood pressure.
Pretty lucky, that elbow problem.
Well, that's exactly what the doctor said. He said this might have gone on until we were in severe kidney failure if it hadn't been for that little accident. Well, we've come to terms with all that, but one thing has come up that is my question for y'all today, for Dr. Zorba. My son is healthy and athletic and smart, but he's also always been oppositional and defiant, difficult from a behavioral standpoint. Now, our nephrologist says that potassium can affect mood or behavior. But we're not sure, and that's what we want to know. Is there any evidence that there's a relationship between behavior and mood and high potassium levels or high phosphorus levels, all this kind of stuff?
We like to look sometime at human behavior and say, gee, this is the factor that doesn't. And sometimes it is the case, death in a family, some serious intervention, abuse, though that really can change behavior on a dime. And change it right away. Post-traumatic stress disorder being the perfect example of something that can happen. The issue with your son, though, is that now he has to be – he's how old at this point?
He's 15 now. That was a year
ago. He's 15. Okay. So, people say, well, he's just a teenager. Well, as a father of four, I never accepted that with my kids. Now, my kids were teenagers. They did engage in oppositional behavior. Don't get me wrong. They were exactly the type of perfect children that we all think we have but we don't have because, perfection for a teenager means oppositional behavior. That's how they separate out from the nest. Mm-hmm. And I think – looking at that is important because he has a chronic disease. And so it's sometimes very hard for 15-year-olds to get their handle around the fact that they can't eat like everybody else. And that's really tough for them because they're going with their buds. Their buds want to eat pizza, high salty food, all the stuff that he can't necessarily have.
Right. So
one thing you know is that, he's difficult to control in terms of, his blood chemicals. That's number one. But number two, counseling here is very important. He's a 15-year-old with chronic disease. 15-year-old boys are at risk. They have a disease I call testosterone dementia, where the testosterone goes through his body and makes him demented, and he's got a disease in addition to this. And so the controlling of impulses, learning about, what's okay and what's not okay in terms of opposition, I think is critical. And that's where counseling will play a role because – even oppositional kids, when you ask them and you interview them in situations who they respect the most, inevitably the parents come out 95 out of 100 times. And so it's important for you to get counseling for him and to make sure he gets his chemicals checked on a regular basis. Good luck with him. It's a tough situation, and please let us know what's going on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call. Before the break, Zorba, let's take a moment for another listener tip. This helpful hint comes to us from a listener named Dan, who has a suggestion of his own for dealing with tennis elbow. He writes, "A few years ago, I had the same condition for perhaps a year or more. It was to the point that it even hurt when I tried to sleep. I'm an architect and attributed my condition to the position of leaning over my drawing board for long periods of time. The cure? Bowling. One Friday, we went bowling, but I didn't think I'd be able to do it. Let me finish. I attribute my cure to the fact that swinging the 12-pound ball gently stretched the tendons and muscles. I purposely used both arms once I realized it was feeling good. No shots, no therapy."
So what is that? You mean he bowled with his right arm and then he bowled with
apparently,
his left arm? Yeah.
An ambidextrous bowler.
When was the last time you went bowling?
I wonder what
the
score is.
That's what I want to know. It's exactly what I wanted to know. What was the score? Absolutely, that came onto my mind. Yeah. And were there bumpers in the gutters like they do for kids? I think we've got a new therapy here. Instead of tennis elbow, send people to the bowling alley, put on the bumpers, and start to bowl with
your
balls.
It is kind of interesting.
No, I'm saying, in all seriousness, that may be a great treatment. And you know what? If he sends us his name, we will name the treatment after him. That's what we will do. And we will get it up there in lights. But in all seriousness, it's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. I think it's a good idea.
Well, don't spare us your lifestyle tips.
Ooh,
strike,
I love it.
Strike up the next listener tip email by sending us your helpful hint in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or through our Facebook page.
Our recipe is coming up next. More of your calls later on, our medical myth buster, and we have some more interesting research to talk about here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But before we get back to the phones, it is, of course, recipe time. This one for venison with cranberry wine sauce.
That's right. Venison with cranberry wine sauce. When was the last time you got a deer when you were hunting, Tom?
Yeah, it's been a while. Right. How about you?
No, I got one deer. I got one deer
really?
In my life. Yeah, I got it with my Honda. And I was driving down the road, November. November. And all of a sudden, I heard this sound. I just moved from Chicago down to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I looked at these legs. I heard a sound.
Yeah.
And then I looked at these legs going under the car. And my first thought was, that's awfully big to be a rabbit.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
That's why.
And
I've seen the head on your wall.
That's right. It's the head. That's right. That's what it's from. That's my deer story. But venison, which you can also purchase, just sometimes you get it through friends.
Yeah.
But really good venison is really good. And often venison, because it's a wild flavor, is not prepared correctly, and so it doesn't taste good. And one of the problems with venison is you can overcook it. Now, beef, you can overcook it, and it often becomes tender, and you put it in stew. Venison, when you overcook it, does not taste good.
Yeah.
It's got one-third less fat than red meat. It's not the other white meat. Pork, of course, is not the other white meat either. That was their slogan. But it is a lean cut of red meat. And during a season, November, December, October tend to be a venison season. And the reason is people hunt, and there are a lot of hunters in our state, in Wisconsin. There are 500,000 hunters that go during the hunting season, during the rifle season. They bring home a lot of venison, frankly, and they cook it. So,
well, let's do it.
Let's do this recipe. So, okay. I'll start out with 1 cup of low-sodium chicken broth.
A cup low-sodium chicken broth.
That's right. And low-sodium chicken broth has two advantages. A, it has less sodium, obviously an advantage. But because of that, they have to add more chickeny flavor. And there was a good article in Cook's Illustrated that showed that the taste of low-sodium chicken broth is not only less salty, but it's a better flavor. So always go for it. A cup of beef broth.
A cup of beef broth.
That's right. 1/2 cup port wine.
half a cup of port wine.
Now, do you keep port wine on your shelf for cooking at all?
No, I don't.
You know, it's kind of a full-tasting wine. I've had a cup of port. I don't particularly like the taste
of
it.
You can't drink a lot of it.
No, you can't drink. Yeah. I can't drink any of it, but it has a full it has a full flavor. But if you're not going to use it, you want something that has a full-flavored wine. Merlot is probably going to be a little bit light, but that would be okay. So some kind of red wine, port wine being the best. One-third of a cup of whole berry cranberry sauce.
A third of a cup of whole berry cranberry sauce. Yeah.
Now, I always associate that with Thanksgiving, you know the cranberry sauce because we eat it.
Sure, of course.
Do you eat it during the year otherwise?
Cranberry sauce? No, I actually
– I like it. I even like cranberry sauce.
No, I do too.
Sauce.
I love it.
But I don't know why. And if you make it, it's not complex to make at all. I just don't
– You remember Susan Stamberg's recipe for cranberry sauce?
No, I don't. I don't remember. What is
you
it?
Take a can opener and open the can. Yeah. Take the can. Shake the can. Get it out and put it on the plate.
And put it on the plate. That's Susan Stamberg's cranberry sauce. Yeah. Her famous.
Yeah,
her
right,
famous
right,
cranberry
right,
sauce recipe. Right. A dash of balsamic vinegar.
A dash. Of balsamic vinegar.
That's right. 3 tablespoonfuls of butter.
3 big T butter.
Divided. And then 1.5 to 2 pounds of venison tenderloin. Again, tenderloin, remember, is the least fat cut of meat that we have. Yeah. So this is venison tenderloin.
1.5 to 2 pounds of venison tenderloin.
And then some salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So in a saucepan, combine the chicken and beef broths, bring to a boil, and reduce to 1 cup. So at a slow boil, that's going to take 15, 20 minutes. Then add the port wine and boil for an additional 15 minutes. Okay, so the alcohol, basically, most of it is going to leave. Then whisk in the cranberry sauce. You're going to whisk it in, the vinegar, and simmer for another 5 minutes. Then whisk in 1 tablespoon of the butter and season it to taste and set it aside. So you've got a really good taste. You've got the sour, if you will, from the vinegar. You've got the sweetness from the cranberry sauce. You've got the smoothness of the butter. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the unami, which is this full flavor of chicken and beef broth. So wonderful, wonderful sauce.
Yeah.
Then season the venison tenderloin. Cut it into 3/4-inch medallions. It's important when you cut, you're going to cut against the grain. And use a sharp knife. Now, in my house, we recently got new knives because a good friend of ours who's a professional chef came up from Chicago. She looked at our knives and she said, get rid of these. And I said, I've had these for years. They have meaning to me. And she said, well, the meaning they have to me is nothing. So Penny convinced me that I should spend some money on good knives. Yeah. You don't have to spend a lot. Wonderful. They work really well. But you know what the disadvantage is of a good knife?
It cuts you.
They cut you. It's the knives attack you. Yeah, so until you get used to them, you start having finger injuries.
Yeah.
Anyway, season the venison tenderloin, cut against the grain 3/4-inch medallions, then melt the remaining butter in a large nonstick skillet over high heat. Mm-hmm. Add the venison to the skillet and cook it only 2 minutes on each side. Mm-hmm. Yes, only 2 minutes. You're just going to 2 minutes on each side. Remember, do not overcook. Divide the sauce among the 4 plates. Place the medallions on top of the sauce. 2 little medallions per plate will be fine. Enjoy it. Maybe open up a fine red wine. Have a wonderful fresh salad next to it. I'd probably have some seasoned couscous or wonderful little pasta dish.
You got to make it a little less heart healthy by having mashed potatoes.
Mashed potatoes. Okay. You convinced me. Mashed potatoes. Potatoes on the side, done ever so right. That's it. You've got this. Anyway, it's a great recipe, folks. Yeah. I think you'll like it. 286 calories for each serving from this. It's a wonderful recipe that I think that you will like.
Yeah, and if you didn't write all these ingredients down, you can probably get this recipe.
That's right. You can go to our website at zorbapastor.org. And while you're on there, you can sign up for our weekly podcast. And by the way, we're podcasting the entire show now, so you can pull down the entire show. That's zorbapastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
Our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's take a call from Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for taking my call, and I have to say that I really love your program.
Aren't you nice?
And I have an issue with my ears. I'm 44 years old, and the best way I can describe it is that my ears get hot frequently. And I've had this condition at least since my 20s. For example, I could be in the car. I could be driving. It could be snow on the ground, and I will have the window down or the air conditioner on my ears because they're so hot. Hmm. The rest of my body is completely fine, but my ears are completely on fire.
Is there any pain or discomfort involved?
It's annoying. It's in the pain, if I don't kind of do anything with it, it's going to kind of crescendo until it feels like someone's just sticking a pin in my ear. It could be either ear, or it could be both ears at the same time.
Yeah, you are not describing a pleasant sensation. Someone sticking a pin in their ear, you know, it's funny. We talk about, you know, my ears are burning. Somebody's talking about me. Someone's sticking a pin in your ear, and I think about voodoo. You know, somebody is sticking a pin in your ear. But, of course, it's not a funny thing at all. A couple questions. Do your fingers get hot and cold? Your toes get hot and cold? Anything else in the peripheral part of your body?
No, nothing else does.
And any medications that you're on at all?
I take a 10-milligram lisinopril.
First of all, let me assure you that I don't have the foggiest idea what's going on. Let me give you that reassurance.
All right.
For those of you out there in Radio Land who think I know what I'm talking about, I really don't. So now that I've given the disclaimer, I'm going to give advice.
Well, every other time you know what you're talking about.
That's right. I always know what I'm talking about in this case. I mean, just because I don't know what I'm talking about doesn't mean I can't give advice. Now, I'm going to give some advice. And my advice is, this may be related in some way to an adrenal response. In other words, it may be in some way related to adrenal response.
Okay.
Cortisol, epinephrine levels or adrenaline levels in our body can do funny things. You're on lisinopril, which is an ACE inhibitor, which is used in high blood pressure. I mean, that's the reason that people are put on it. I would recommend that you talk to your doctor and you consider going on something called a beta blocker instead and see what that does. And I'll tell you why. Beta blockers are very, very interesting drugs. They help people with migraine headaches. They help people who have what's called thyrotoxicosis, where the thyroid is putting out too many hormones. It helps control the results of that. They help people with stage fright. And they help people with a variety of other things that are going on. And so they're very interesting drugs. And I'll give you a personal example because I had a rhythm disturbance at one time and I was put on a beta blocker for a while. And I do some TV stuff. And before the TV, when I'd be sitting on the set, before the set would go on and they would say 10 seconds to go, I would always think, okay, don't make a mistake. It would be in my brain. When I took the beta blocker for this 1 month period, that thought never came into my mind. It was very interesting because I noticed it wasn't there anymore. You should try a beta blocker for this and see what happens. And there's some good reasons. You're on low dose lisinopril. I'd try a beta blocker, atenolol or Inderol, instead of the ACE inhibitor, so you're not taking two drugs. And see what happens. And like I said, I don't know what's going on, but there's something going on that I think is adrenally mediated. I'd like you to try it and then let us know.
That makes sense to me. I'm kind of experiencing it now. So I have a kind of nervousness for being on the phone. And I've also noticed that I'm also a teacher. And so occasionally when I'm rushing or when I'm concentrating about, okay, what I'm going to say, I get the same kind of sensations. So if it's adrenaline-related, that's probably making a bit more sense to me.
And the thing about a beta blocker is it's not a tranquilizer. It doesn't tranquilize you at all. Stops the adrenal response, stops the fast pulse that's often associated with it, and it may stop this. So you try it, as I said, low-dose atenolol or low-dose Inderol. Talk to your doctor. There are six other beta blockers on the market. Let us know, and then we'll continue this conversation on our Facebook page.
Awesome.
On a face. There are a lot of people who have the same.
It's interesting, as we're talking, my ears are starting to get warm.
Yeah, that's because I'm talking about you. That's because I'm talking about you. That's it. That's it. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you for your time.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And before the break, Zorba, let's take another quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox for this installment of Traveling Tips from Zorba. Today's question comes to us from...
I don't know this tip. Is this a tip for me?
You travel.
I do.
That's
I do
it. Travel. So this is from Zorba, not for Zorba. Okay. Today's question comes to us from Amy in Wisconsin and deals with a possible remedy for altitude sickness. Mm-hmm. Amy writes, my husband and I are headed to Machu Picchu, and we were wondering about the use of cocoa leaves for altitude sickness. Being longtime listeners, we remembered a previous show when you advised a traveler to take an aspirin per day prior to the trip, which my PA thought was sound advice. We've been taking the aspirin for at least 6 weeks. So the questions are, what effect do the cocoa leaves have on the body to help cope with altitude sickness? And are there any concerns with consuming the tea or the leaves?
Well, I mean, you know what cocoa leaves, you know, I mean, they're cocoa. I mean, they're from,
yeah,
you know,
right,
I mean,
right.
They're, we don't have them in this country because it is a controlled substance. And traditionally, that is what, that's what Mayans use. They use cocoa leaves, in, you know, for altitude sickness. And I've read that they may be effective. So they might be effective. I know something that is definitely effective, and that's Diamox, D-I-A-M-O-X. And I would get the immediate release Diamox, 125 milligrams. Mm-hmm. And I would take one a day or one twice a day. You can actually increase it to one 3 times a day. And when I last year when I was in Nepal and Tibet and spent, you know, practically a month at 14,000 feet, mm-hmm. I didn't have altitude sickness. And I get altitude sickness all the time when I go skiing. Mm-hmm. So really, really worked for me. The aspirin I was talking about is really for the headache associated. It doesn't do anything mm-hmm. for altitude sickness. And as for cocoa leaves, you know, hey, you're there. Do as the people do, right?
Yeah, right.
Do as the people. That's what I would
do. Have you been to Machu Picchu?
No, I haven't.
I haven't either. My daughter went years ago,
and
it was almost a life-changing experience for her. She was just awed.
Yeah, it's right. So when are you going? You and Monica are going to go to Machu Picchu?
Well, I haven't thought of it, but
it might happen. Maybe it should be on your bucket list.
Why not?
That's right. Paris, number one, Machu Picchu, number two.
Can I fit it in between one program and the next?
Absolutely, Tom. Absolutely. Let's raise money for Tom to go to Machu Picchu so he can chew cocoa leaves and not be arrested by the government. I
have about a day or two there. It doesn't seem right. If you're a white-knuckle traveler, make sure to check in with Zorba before your next adventure. Also, make sure to load up on your iPod with plenty of Zorba Pastor on Your Health podcast for the flight. Just send your traveling question in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Lots more of your questions coming up. Our medical myth buster, too. Plenty of good reasons to stick around here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, you say we have some info now on pap tests.
Right. Well, first of all, many, many women for a long time were told they need a pap test every year. And over the last 5 and 10 years, those recommendations have basically changed. But the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology would have one recommendation, the American Academy of Family Physicians another one, the American Cancer Society another one. What they're trying to do is bring all this together and make some new, very clear recommendations. And the recommendations are really good news for women in that they do not have to be tested nearly as often as they were tested in the past. So the first recommendation is that women under the age of 21 should not be tested with pap smears. And the reason is there are some abnormalities in the cervix that simply are part of growing up and in the developing cervix. And so you'll pick up abnormalities that have no meaning at all.
No.
So no test before the age of 21. Second recommendation, between the age of 21 and 29, a woman should have a pap smear roughly once every 3 years. It's not a yearly pap test for most women. The new recommendations is to roughly once every 3 years, and that's what it is. It's not every year at all, even for that group. And then for women over the age of 30, that they should have a pap test and a human papillomavirus test, HPV test. Mm-hmm. And if they have those both together, they can move to once every 5 years. So those are major changes in how often women need to have pap smears.
Yeah. I'm always concerned. I think a lot of other people are too, when we get these kinds of recommendations, that we should wait longer to find out whether we have something that's really, really serious.
Well,
we want to find out sooner rather than later.
And here is the problem. So first of all, cervical cancer is a slow-growing cancer. Why not test every month? Why not test every 2 months? Why not test every 6 months? Who came up with the yearly test? Well, before we had the sophisticated laboratory testing that we have now, we came up with it every year because, frankly, when it first started in 1949, 1950, that was the way to do it. But now with newer testing, we know that with the HPV subtest that we can go out even longer to every 5 years. But I understand your concern. Why the recommendation changing now? Well, the recommendations have been changing over the last 10 years.
Well, now, is there any danger, physical danger to a woman from being tested more often than
Well,
that?
The physical danger is that you will pick up things and have to have biopsies when you don't need them. So that's a physical danger. So here it is. You have a pap smear. It's abnormal. You're worried that you have cervical cancer. You have a biopsy. There are going to be a certain number of complications of the biopsy. So the answer is smart testing. And smart testing means testing that is scientifically based. And it has taken many, many years for all of these organizations to agree on testing. The testing is secure. And I think that every woman should discuss this with her doctor and follow the new guidelines, because that will mean good health.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Wichita, Kansas. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, you spoke about communicable cancers, HPV, and getting throat cancer from oral sex. And I have a two-part question. I was wondering, can men get throat cancer by giving oral sex to women with HPV? And why don't we give vaccines to men as well? Seems like we're only treating half the problem.
Well, actually, you have given this call on a timely basis. The call right now by a number of people in the FDA is that we should now start to vaccinate boys, young boys. Yeah. And actually, that's beginning to happen in a variety of places. You're 100% correct. So looking at HPV, HPV comes into our body through sex. Mm-hmm. That's how we get it, through sex. Somebody else has HPV, we engage in intimate relations in the part of their body that has HPV, and we get HPV. And what happens is this virus causes cancer, causes cervical cancer. Nobody wants that. There's still too many women who die from it. It causes penile cancer in men, a rare disease. Nobody wants it, as rare as it is. Head and neck cancer. It causes throat cancer. It causes mouth cancer. It's a bad actor. And many of us, you know, get rid of it, but some of us do not, and the virus goes on and changes the cells. And so the way to vaccinate is to vaccinate in middle school, to vaccinate when kids, way before they have sex, because this way, when they come into contact with HPV, they will not get that to enter their body. Now, it's very interesting what you said. There's been pushback by a number of groups who, and I'm not a member of any of those groups. I want to state absolutely that I believe that all children, boys and girls, should be vaccinated for HPV. I don't believe that the vaccination causes you to have sex. I think desire causes you to have sex, but it's not the vaccine. Now, what they've done is, when they recommend it to girls, there's been a hue and cry by some people that, no, you're going to engage in premature sex because now you're protected. The hue and cry has not happened for boys. In other words, in areas where they've recommended for boys, they say, oh yeah, vaccinate my son, but don't vaccinate my daughter. It is a two-faced ethical issue that I find fascinating. Yeah. It's okay to vaccinate boys because we want them to be protected, but the girls, oh, it's a little different. We're going to start to engage. And there's social issues here that we have to address as a society. You may be on one side or another, but you bring it up. And right now, because when we've been talking about this, I thought, why not? Well, the FDA now says boys should be vaccinated too.
Well, I agree with them.
Yeah, I do too. Then, just like other vaccines, people will opt out of it for their children, and that is their right as a parent. But I think it's just going to – all this folly around it, I think, is going to disappear.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the answer.
Yeah, we thank you for the call. Can adults get this vaccine?
Well, would it do any good? The issue is that you want to get the vaccine before you actually have HPV. And right now, the recommendation is not to vaccinate adults and, you know, under not to vaccinate boys or men or women under the age of 26. That by that time, older than 26, because by that time they've actually come into contact with it. And right now, I don't know. Right now, that's not the recommendation. So you bring up a good question. Yeah. Should adults who are engaging in sexual intercourse with a partner who they're not monogamous with.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're with one partner, if they're monogamous, they probably have HPV infected already if they're going to get it. But if they're engaging in sex with multiple partners, should adults get the HPV vaccine? I don't know the answer. Right now, the feds have said no, but that is a good point.
Yeah. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from a listener named Bill that deals with garlic. Does it keep vampires away?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Garlic, I can tell you unequivocally that since I've been eating Italian food, I have never seen a vampire. And I know that's the reason. My mother cooked Italian food, and we come from a long family of eating Italian food.
Actually, he has another question. Hello, Zorba. He says, I'm currently fighting a cold and read that eating garlic can help. So I went ahead and ate 2 raw cloves. Almost instantly, I started to feel lightheaded and needed to sit down. This prompted me to research garlic further on the internet, and a few articles claim that garlic is toxic. Some claim that it causes problems with the brain. In that the left and right hemispheres don't communicate properly. So is that true?
Well, that must be why when you go to Italy, they're so relaxed. It must be because their garlic doesn't allow their left brain and their right brain to communicate.
Right.
So they relax.
Right.
They have some wine, and you know, the next day is fine.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff around garlic. It is a traditional folk remedy for everything: cancer and heart disease, and sexual dysfunction, and you know, it'll keep you alive. And I'm not surprised. I cannot imagine eating 2 cloves and just kind of chewing the cloves. Although from a cooking point of view, I love garlic. You know, I always put it in. And there have been some studies with garlic that show that it may help with, you know, with a chronic cold and other. And then there's a theoretical reason that it's rich in antioxidants, like onions. Basically, it's in the same family as onions. And so we know that. So I think there's a lot of hype around garlic. That's what I think. And if you're going to have garlic, have it the Italian way with your pasta.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba. We welcome a caller in Racine, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have hair loss runs in my family with my mom and my grandmother. But it's becoming more noticeable, and I'm in my late 30s, and so I'm becoming a little self-conscious about that, but I don't want to, you know, do any implants or anything dramatic or drastic like that. I've heard somebody mention Nioxin, but I wondered if there's any natural, you know, products, foods that I should be eating that to help strengthen my hair or slow down my hair loss. I didn't know also because I have lost just about 50 pounds, and I didn't know if that also could be contributing to the hair loss.
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of things. There's certain things that can add to hair loss. Stress, a weight loss can do it. You know, like you said, a disease. Often people, after they have a chronic disease or they have an injury or they've had surgery, hereditary is the big issue. I mean, that's the underlying issue. Your mother had it, your grandmother had it, and you have the same genes. So genetics play a role, just like they do in men. They play a role in women too. Rogaine, which is a topical product, actually can be used by women. Propecia cannot, because that's used for male pattern baldness, and it's an anti-testosterone component drug, and it doesn't work for women, so you can't use it. That's a pill. So the best thing I could recommend is Rogaine. There's no natural product that I know of, and by any means, that will stop this from happening. You want to make sure you don't have, you know, a fungal infection or something wrong with your hair. Your hairdressers are really pretty good for picking this up. But That's what you have. It's a genetic disorder that we don't understand and we have trouble reversing. But the Rogaine is not an oral product. It's a topical product, and I certainly would try it and see if it works for you. You've got to use it for about 3 to 6 months to see if it works. And once again, the generic drug is going to be just as good as the name brand.
Okay.
So I wish I had a natural product that it would work for it. You'll see, as I'm sure you've looked on the net, lots of hype, lots of stuff, lots of claims there. And if you look at hair loss, it's been a claim for years, you know, as tonics. That's what the charlatans used to do in the circus wagons. They used to go around and they used to sell hair tonics and claim that hair was turned around. It's always been a big issue with people. So
okay.
Good luck.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thanks. And Zorba, before we leave for the week, let's pause for our first, but probably not last, version of a segment called Disagreeing with Tom. On a past show, I made a claim about a unique ability I possess. Well, it took about 5 seconds before our inbox and phone lines were flooded with listeners claiming I wasn't that special. Liz from Clinton, Tennessee, sums up the claim very well, writing, "Tom bragged on his ability to move the tips of his fingers at the first joint of his index fingers without moving the rest of the fingers. He claimed he is, quoting, the only person in the world who can do that." Sorry, Tom, you're wrong. About 40 years ago, when I was still in high school, we got a new teacher who could move the first joint of the fingers on either side of his middle finger, on both hands, simultaneously. It's the most entertaining way I have ever seen of being flipped the bird.
That's very good.
Thanks for the good
That's
laugh.
That's very good. And you know what? We can say that on public radio, yeah. Flipping the bird.
Yeah, bird is okay.
Yeah, bird is acceptable.
Well, you don't have to flip me off to tell me I'm wrong. Just send your thoughts to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week,
Zorba. Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, that's show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, we're on Facebook, too.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Executive producer Adam Friedrich and technical director Brad Kohlberg make up the Control Room Jazz Duo and are the guys responsible for this hour. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidman. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping... Please be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1110Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.